Hello, my name is Brandy Walker. Welcome to Throwing Light. This is episode 40, an interview with Jenna Fox. Okay, I'm just stoked for this interview. It's so, so good. Jenna is so wise. She is a licensed mental health counselor, educator, writer, and tarot reader living on unceded Duwamish land called Seattle. As a queer adult adoptee, she is working to reclaim her ancestral wisdom to pass on to her children. She is described by her community college students as sympathetic, but with a blunt sense of humor. And I just find her delightful. And so let's get right into it. Jenna and I met via Instagram. I don't know exactly how it happened, but we connected and then we realized we both had podcasts and we realized we were both into some of the same like weird spiritual stuff. She said she's probably way farther out than me. So I'm interested. I asked her to come on the show because I'm interested to see, I mean, not see, but I'd love to hear, you know, her take on weird spiritual wisdom and her personal spiritual evolution and what she does and how she got here. Her podcast is called Leo Rising Tarot, right? Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's great to have you on.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm really excited to be here. I know we've been trying to connect for a hot minute, and so we're finally doing it. And I'm really excited to be here. Yeah.
And I'm so excited to have you. So tell us what you do, who you are. Tell us about your podcast. How do you describe yourself?
Okay, so I'm Jenna Fox, and I am living out in the Seattle area and born and raised in the Pacific Northwest. So I call Seattle home. And by day, I am a community college instructor for students who've dropped out of high school. So that's kind of my superpower, is working with teenagers who have kind of an interesting, you know, upbringing. It varies between the traditional high school dropout, you know, maybe drugs, alcohol, other sort of life traumas. And then we have a pretty large percentage of our students who are homeschooled as well. And they're kind of seeing this as like a way to get a free college education. So That's kind of how I spend like the bulk of my professional life. I am a mental health counselor, and so that's one of the things I know you and I have in common, is kind of that professional counseling, social work background. But yes, I'm definitely into the woo-woo spirituality. In my working the 9-to-5 sort of job, which is not really 9-to-5. Because I'm a teacher, but I'm a tarot reader and a Reiki practitioner. So I've been doing Reiki since 2010, and I've been doing tarot for the last couple of years. But really, it was in 2018 that I launched my Leo Rising Tarot business and my podcast. So my podcast is Leo Rising, a Living Tarot and Creative Intuition Podcast. Which explores kind of some of the same things that you explore. Like, I try to ground most episodes in some tarot wisdom, but it doesn't always end up being that way because I'm into astrology and energy work and get to have conversations with wonderful people who are doing all sorts of cool things in the spiritual world. So that's kind of me in a nutshell. I mean, I don't know. I'm a mom. I consider myself a witch, but I also go to a Presbyterian church every week. So, you know, I've got some interesting blends of things happening in my life.
Wow. Yeah. That's I love the kind of mix of more like, I don't know what you'd call it, but like the therapeutic, evidence-based, and then like the woo-woo stuff. Am I right that you have sort of an evangelical background or did it? Okay. So do you want to talk about that and like share like where you came from and how you got into, I feel like Reiki is almost like a gateway drug. I had a Reiki practitioner work with me over the phone, I think, one time, right after I'd had my son. But I haven't worked with a Reiki practitioner in, I take that back. I did one time, but it was like a mixture of Reiki and massage, and it was amazing. Mm-hmm. But can you just explain kind of what, okay, so I'm asking you two things. So first, let's explain what Reiki is, and then I'll go back to the evangelical question.
Yeah, so Reiki is based out of Japan. So it is an energy healing system that instead of like some energy work where it is from the practitioner that is kind of channeling from their own energy, Reiki's like whole perspective is that we are just kind of like a conduit for ki or chi or life source, prana, kind of all of the different major religious systems have sort of an idea or conceptualization of like the energy. And so it was a system that was created or discovered in Japan. And then there's like a whole, you know, lineage that was brought to the United States through Hawaii and is, for me, it was something that I really, I came to it while I was in graduate school for mental health counseling. And what I loved about it is that it was in the Seattle area, there was actually a woman who was working with the state to kind of create a accredited or standardized way of having energy work that could be then recognized by hospitals and mental health agencies and other things so that it wasn't just so on the fringe because they're now doing it in hospitals. There's a lot of kind of they're working on research and creating some of that evidence-based, information that is maybe lacking for some of the other kind of woo-woo spiritual things. And so it can be done, Reiki can be done remotely. Like you said, over the phone or distance. I typically do it in person when I do it. I don't do a ton of Reiki sessions, trying to squeeze things into my week between teaching and momming and all the other things. But I have like a massage table and I go around, so I don't have like a dedicated space like a massage therapist would. I'm sort of like a traveling Reiki practitioner. So it can be done hands-on. I kind of describe it to people who've maybe never had a Reiki session is that it's a little bit like an energy massage without sort of the deep tissue work. So I can put my hands on people or I can hover above depending on their comfort level with being touched.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. So let's back up. How did you get here?
The long and winding journey to where I am now. When I was growing up, I was raised in a pretty evangelical upbringing. My parents, I say fundamentalism, and I'm not like a church scholar, so I'm not sure if I'm always using the right words, but it felt like it was pretty fundamentalism. There was one way, but it was more like there was a bullseye, and it was trying to hit the center of the bullseye, and in the center of the bullseye, there's like more of a center of the bullseye, right? It's kind of this really kind of how I felt, like very dogmatic and black or white, right or wrong. You know, if you kind of go off the track you are going to hell, like a literal hell. But as a kid, I was super spiritual. I mean, I was like, I would always be kind of like singing songs and like making potions in the backyard and lived really in like a dreamy, imaginative world that I actually feel like when people ask me now, like, how did this happen or how did you become this? It's more of like a remembering of where I was when I was a kid, like probably pre-adolescent. And so yeah, it's kind of just that like rediscovery spirituality of my childhood before some of the really black or white dogma came into my life. But I was really steeped in the evangelical church. Like when I was in college, I was part of the college ministry. I was an intern. I went on short-term mission trips. I like raised money to go and do like a long-term mission trip, which only ended up being about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was like very Christian. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, I kind of still had these like more fringe ideas or things that just kind of like bubbled up for me. Dreams, prophetic, like dreams that would come true or knowing or things that I kind of either brushed aside or I was worried that it was like demonic, mm-hmm. you know, demonic influences. So really I would say that my stepping away from evangelical Christianity happened when I met my husband in 2006. So 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was in a mainline tradition. So that's where the Presbyterian church comes in. He was getting his graduate degree in divinity. So he originally wanted to be a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to be a pastor's wife. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine that alternate life that, wow. you know, exists out there somewhere.
So what did anything happen that kind of evolved your beliefs, or did you guys, so I know for my husband and I mean, thankfully, because we both were pretty Christian when we met, and then as mm-hmm. we got married, first it was like more progressive Christianity. We came upon like this term emergent church, and we started mm-hmm. going to a church that didn't call themselves emergent, but that was what came up when we had looked online. And it was a stepping stone to this wild, wild west. Was it like that, or was it just like, I mean, you still go, and it's funny because I still go to that church too, but I struggle with it sometimes. And if you've listened to the podcast, I've talked about that. I mean, I love my church, but sometimes I wonder, like, if I fit there.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So I'm wondering, like, how, like, yeah, from 2006 to, like, now, like what happened? And how did, I mean, so you started getting into Reiki around 2010 or 11, 10. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would say that actually one of the things that I really appreciated about the church that I went to in college as an intern, we did start reading some of the emergent church, Brian McLaren's A New Kind of Christian, and we were reading some of the things that I hadn't necessarily come across before, some like ethical dilemmas in Christianity. So I remember there being we would read these articles, and then as interns, we would kind of discuss where we fall on the line of some of this faith. And I just remember there was a conversation around like, converting somebody it was a tribal culture, they were converting to Christianity, and then the question was whether the tribal chief needed to give up having multiple wives in order to be considered Christian. And so we were having this conversation around what is faith and what is culture. And so I do appreciate, and even my parents, as much as they were dogmatic in a lot of their beliefs, they always encouraged me to read. And so that's where a lot of my exploration of different things happened, is that I was like constantly reading different things. But When I met my husband, he showed me the difference in how I had been raised to think about church and how he conceptualized it. So he always said that the church was more like a pasture, and that there were certain beliefs that were kind of like fences, that kind of, you know, they're in the Christianity is like, you know, Jesus is the Son of God or whatever, as kind of like these posts that you could explore within the wide range of like what that even meant, versus having to find like the exact right middle of the bullseye. And so actually it was a lot of the conversations that I had with him early on that he was really accepting of me coming to our relationship, to our conversations, with just like whatever I was thinking or believing or exploring. And that was kind of the first time that I felt safe enough to open up about some of the things that I had actually been thinking about, I think, since I was a kid, right? I remember back to like when I was in seventh grade and I would tell people or sixth grade, that I had like a fairy that lived, or an elf that lived on my shoulder, you know, just like into this, the magical realm. So, but when I was in graduate school, I was in a spiritual dimensions of counseling class. It was an elective I had to take in the summertime. And my instructor was a spiritual coach, well, counselor, what's the term, like spiritual director. So he did a lot of, yeah, so he was a spiritual director and had a lot of wisdom around creating ritual and exploring and spiritual, that's when I first learned about like theories of spiritual belief. Like I came across James Fowler's Spiritual Dimensions, and I was just blown away by the conversations and the exploration and the being able to, just like anything in graduate school, wrestle with all of my own issues. Right? Mm-hmm. And that was when I remember coming home and I like told my husband, I was like, I just need to let myself believe what I actually believe, instead of trying to convince myself to believe something that I feel like I'm supposed to believe for the church or my family or whatever. So that was really what set me off down the path of doing like Reiki and looking at like, one of the books I read was Carol and Mrs. Anatomy of the Spirit, that was looking at the connections of health and spirituality. And so it's hard to pinpoint like one exact moment, but that's kind of the trajectory early on.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I love what you said about giving yourself permission to believe what you believed instead of what you felt like you were supposed to believe. So it's interesting because when I first came to, so actually the church I go to now is Brian McLaren's old church. He's not the preacher there anymore, but so that was kind of how we, when I was looking up churches, I was like, oh, it was Brian McLaren's old church. And the, our pastor now is just super wise and super open-minded. And I've always just valued his wisdom. It reminds me, your, bullseye versus pasture, metaphor reminds me of when we first started going to my church. They had this thing called The Journey that was kind of like an introduction to what their beliefs as a church, because it was a little bit different than maybe some of the other churches that a lot of people end up in my church because it's kind of their last stop before they're exiting Christianity.
Right.
And not to say not everybody goes down the path that I went down. Some of them like really find a home in this space, but he explained this theory, bounded set versus centered set. And so the idea was like, if you picture like a big circle and a bounded set belief system, the outside of the circle has a really thick, line, And inside is kind of all the beliefs that you're supposed to believe. And as long as you're in that circle, you don't really have to go anywhere. You just have to believe these set of things. And then the centered set was, it's actually more like a bullseye, but it's not, you're not coming at it from outside of it. It's like a fuzzy, bigger line on the outside, and you can be outside of the circle or inside of the circle, but the center, as they described it, was Jesus. And as long as you're sort of like heading there, then you belong, and it looks different. So the kind of beliefs are all still there, but you're not, those aren't as important. So that was really freeing for us, and really a helpful way to conceptualize like where we're headed. And I think like as we, I guess, fell down this spiritual rabbit hole, we got farther outside the circle. But in a way, we're still heading, I don't know if I would say the center is Jesus, and I still really resonate with Jesus as a spiritual leader and as a prophet and as a savior. But I also feel like that it's almost like for me, the center has become that energy, that life force, that like divine spark that kind of is a part of all of us that I think Jesus was a part of. So what I got really fond of saying, I guess when I was really first conceptualizing this, is I think that God is bigger than Christianity. And it just like I felt like it didn't fit everything that I needed it and wanted it to fit. So that's kind of a little bit of how I conceptualize it.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about so there's a couple things I wanted to say. I wonder, and I don't know if you, well, I guess you do, because you had messaged me after I did the past live episode. And I was wondering, when you were saying like it was such a big part of your, like you were very spiritual as a child, it just kind of came naturally to you. I wonder if like, have you had any past life? Have you done any past life work? I wonder if maybe you had some of this spirituality, maybe that was a part of past lives, or maybe you were a witch in a past life or a spiritual leader.
Yeah, so I came across Dr. Michael Newton's book, Journey of Souls. It was in graduate school. So, you know, I feel like for a lot of people, graduate school ends up being sort of this like great opening of like academics, but then, you know, to like intellect and then also like their heart. Like I just felt like I was like really cracked open in a way that I was kind of unprepared for. I thought I was going to go and get to like, you know, do some more classes like I'd taken in college. And I was like, wow, unprepared for the emotional and spiritual work that I was doing. So I came across this book, Case Studies on Past Lives. But what was interesting to me about it was that it was in his work, he actually started to do work between lives. So people, like not just their past lives, but the life between lives. Mm-hmm. And when I read it, so they, people were under hypnosis. And I tend to be the kind of person that, I joke with my husband about this, like there's two types of people, and I'm sure that there are more, but I am like an owl, where when I come across something new, a book, some piece of information, every time I'm in a class, I like swallow all of the information whole. And I'm like, oh, this is my new thing. So I was like, so into past lives at that moment. And then like an owl, you know, the owl pellets are all the things that like don't really fit, the bones, the hair, the stuff that just kind of can't be digested. Mm-hmm. Whereas my husband's the kind of person that comes to information much more like a scavenger, like picking at the like bits of information that he wants rather than just like swallowing the whole like lion hole, you know? When I read this information about past lives and even the soul state in life between lives, it really hit me in my body in a way that felt so true. So like, but I couldn't, I didn't have any like evidence for it.
Mm-hmm.
But so in the last year, I haven't done any past life regressions. But last year I had my Akashic records read. I just had one session, and the Akashic records, the idea is that kind of all of the information from everybody's lives, all the past lives, exists sort of in a library.
Mm-hmm.
And that we can access these at any time. But then there are people who are kind of specifically trained to, you know, just like a librarian, go and get the actual book you asked for and not mm-hmm. just like let you wander around trying to figure it out on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And in that reading, she had said that I had a past life where I had been stoned to death as a witch. And that felt really true, which was really interesting to me, because in this last year, I've also been doing ancestral healing,
mm-hmm.
Which is working with my four ancestral lineages. So my mother's mother, mother's father, father's father, father's mother. And in one of my most recent ancestral healing sessions, I was working on my father's mother's lineage. And in the guided facilitated meditation state, we're kind of, I as the journeyer am like protected from being seen by unwell ancestors. But as I was traveling down my lineage, looking for places to kind of work with the energy to kind of bring some healing, there was a moment where that actually like shifted. And I saw a young-ish, like 19-year-old girl, woman, who in the meditation like looked at me as the journeyer and said to me, we are the same. And she was being, it seemed to me like I had entered into that moment that like 9 months ago, where she had said that I had lived in a past life being stoned to death, that seemed to be the moment that I had entered into that storyline. So that was really interesting. And, I totally believe it, not just for my own self. But my oldest son, he's 7, and when he was a kid, he is still a child, but when he was like, you know, when he was like 3.5 to mm-hmm. 5, 4.5, maybe 5, he had, 3 past life stories that he told me, which were really, really powerful and were totally different than how he talked as a 3.5-year-old.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so interesting. And there's just so much there. So are you saying that kind of as you were doing this ancestral healing, you came upon, it sounds like, an ancestor who was you, like who you mm-hmm. were in a past life. Wow.
Yeah, that's the like felt sense that I got, that it was mm-hmm. that it was the same as the life that had been told in the other
sure.
reading. Yeah.
That's really interesting. How did you get into the ancestral healing? Is it like do you go to a class, or is it a online thing?
So I listen to a lot of podcasts mm-hmm. as you know, as a podcaster, I'm like, I love this genre. So I listen to a lot of podcasts, and
sure.
it was, there was a woman. So my ancestral healer, who she's now not taking new one-on-one ancestral healing clients. It's going to be more, I think, in like group and class settings. And her name is Darla Antwine, and she is an Okanagan First Nations, which is one of the tribes here in Washington State. And she actually went to college with my sister-in-law, which it's just like a cool connection.
Mm-hmm.
So I was listening to her, and I actually heard her on 2 podcasts, and I just felt called to work with her. And some of the ancestral healing interest that I have is I'm adopted. And mm-hmm. so I was really interested in, I'm in reunion with both of my biological families. But I was really kind of looking for a different way to connect with my lineage that kind of didn't need me to, you know, sit my biological dad down and have him have to explain like the whole family history.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was actually last summer, right before I kind of actually reached out to Darla to do ancestral healing, I had a dream. And in my dream, I saw, it was like right before I was falling asleep. So it was in that kind of like liminal state between, you know, mm-hmm. Waking and sleeping. And I saw a teacup floating in my mind's eye. And I heard in my ear the name Ruth. And I had known that my biological dad's mom's name was Ruth. And so the next morning, I reached out to my aunt online because sometimes, you know, a little bit more of a distant relative, it feels safer. So I reached out to my aunt and I was like, hey, did your mom drink tea? Did she? And she was like, tell me what happened. Did you have a dream? And because apparently in the family, women have the knowing is what she said. So she said that my grandma did collect teacups, and I described the teacup and she knew exactly which one it was. And it was her grandmother's, or so it was either my great grandma's or my great great grandma's teacup.
Mm-hmm.
And the day that I had this was my grandma's birthday.
Oh, wow.
So, and she had died in like the 80s. Mm-hmm. So it was this interesting, like being in this kind of state where, I was being connected, that was when I decided to actually step out and do ancestral healing. Because I was already sort of feeling called spiritually, and clearly connecting, like, mm-hmm. what are the odds that this grandmother that I had never met, that I would have a premonition dream on her birthday.
Hmm. Wow. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Interestingly, my mom, my adoptive mom, her mom's name is Ruth. So my grandmother's name is Ruth. And my birth mom, her mom's name is Ruth. And yeah. So that's just interesting. So when you do the ancestral healing work, you're working exclusively with your birth line. You're not working with your adoptive because.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was actually something that I was really surprised by. So this ancestral healing technique, there was actually a book by Daniel Foer. So he was the one who kind of through his spiritual experience or whatever, he's initiated in a couple of different lineages, kind of created this technique. And that I had never before come across a technique that explicitly stated adoptees were really welcome and that it would work for them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have no knowledge of your biological history, because in so much of the, I'm sure if you're adopted, you know this, like I go into a doctor's office and I put, I'm adopted. And suddenly it's like, they don't test me for anything. Cause it's like, they assume that I'm just like a blank slate. And I'm like, actually, I wonder if maybe I should be tested for all the things, because like, I'm not sure that heart disease just like goes away because I have an adoption certificate, you know? And so, I had asked actually if we could work with my adoptive lines, and the answer wasn't no, but it was you work with your biological family lines, and that is the most connective, and then there can be some work done with adoptive lines because they cared for me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference in the energy in this perspective is that it does follow bloodlines.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
There's a podcast episode I think the podcast is called The Rising. It's my friend Rebecca's podcast. And she did interview two different people on ancestral healing. And one of them was adopted. And and really didn't have any connection to, wasn't able to connect with her birth family. So she had done some work with her birth family, like through meditation and stuff, but she also had worked with her adoptive family and just kind of like learning the history of, I think both families were of Asian descent and maybe from Japan or at least one of them was from Japan. And so it was like she had traced them way back, and it was just so fascinating. It was really the first time that I was like, I could do ancestral healing with my, like, I hadn't thought about like ancestor work much at all. But then as an adopted person, even every time I did, I didn't really know where to start because I don't have much information. And like, who am I? Like, cause you're kind of like, this is my parents feel like home. And even though, you know, they're not blood, and I haven't explored that work. I'll have to look, and I'll put all this stuff in the show notes, the both books you suggested and Darla Antwine, just so anybody who is interested in this can check it out. It sounds like you're really good at using, at like paying attention to the intuitive hits you receive and kind of like curiously exploring that, and in kind of a non-freaked out way. I think a lot of times when these things, like, I personally feel like they happen to, I mean, it's, I think it's beautiful that you have a lineage of women who know. I'm a little bit jealous, but but I also believe that we all have those capacities to some level, but often when we get those intuitive hits, they freak us out because we're raised in a society that doesn't value that, that calls it weird, that calls it out there. And I mean, the reason I'm into this work is because I find it really full of wisdom and like a deeper wisdom than I can find in frankly in academia. Like, you know, I can read all the journals, all the peer-reviewed journals and, you know, that I want, but there's gonna be something missing. And that's been my struggle in grad school, actually. Like, we're missing a piece. And I think maybe that's why it happens in grad school. Maybe people come to the table ready to, like, deep dive and find that, like, maybe it doesn't happen in the classroom. Maybe it does. But they're also – they're like, I call this my grad school season. So, like – I'm exploring all kinds of things, and I hope to keep doing that. Yeah. So, is there anything, like, anything you want to add? Anything that you want to share?
Yeah. One of the things that I was actually really surprised by, and I think that this is because I'm adopted, I sometimes feel like I'm a sort of like an island to myself, is that after doing ancestral work, it was about 6 weeks after I did my first ancestral healing session. And in it, you meet a guide, a well ancestor from that lineage who's kind of, maybe way back or, you know, depending on kind of where it feels like the lineage is broken. So about 6 weeks after I did my ancestral healing session for the first time, my 2.5-year-old, we were getting him dressed in the morning, and he asked me, where did Peter go? And this is a story that I tell on my podcast as well. And I was like, who's Peter? You know, like, I'm just trying to put on your pants, like, dude, like, we got to go to daycare this morning. And he spent the entire hour car ride to work talking to me about a man who lived in our backyard who wears a bear mask, whose name is Peter, who's tall. You know, he was describing him to me. And I just had shivers, hairs standing up on the back of my neck the entire time, because in the ancestral healing session that I had done, in the guided meditation, the ancestor that I met had been a tall man wearing a bear mask, like a bear headdress, like they would wear, you know, kind of Celtic. Actually, it looks a lot like the pagan otherworld king of swords. And in, I don't know tons about my family, but actually having been doing ancestral healing and having done DNA tests and stuff, like different generations are opening up to me, like somehow I'm getting a hint, and then it's like, oh, eight generations of my dad's mom's side just popped up on my family tree.
So
this, the connecting, like my child is now kind of connected into this energy. And so he was asking where Peter was, and he was describing the same thing that I had seen in my 6 weeks earlier guided meditation. So I get to work and I check my family tree, and it had somehow, somebody had removed a like a link, and so it only went back to 1700. Well, I reconnected and attached one of the files, and it went back to 1451 in England, and the last known ancestor on that lineage that I had been working with, his name was Peter. And it's those kinds of things where I'm like, I'm doing this for me, but it's also like, it's like connecting my kids into this work and letting them feel like, I wonder what it would have been like for me to have grown up as a child being encouraged to follow my intuition and encouraged to, like, my son still sees Peter. It's been four or five months. He wants to leave juice out on the front porch for Peter because he's thirsty. He tells me when he comes and goes, and he'll be three in a couple of weeks. And it's just this beautiful thing to be like, I get to encourage and not shut down my children's process in exploring intuition. And so I think some of that with your podcast is like giving people that freedom to kind of explore, but that it also ripples down and out to
absolutely
family members, kids, friends of mine are starting to kind of come to me, opening up and being like, so I had this thing and I don't want to be crazy. And I'm like, dear girl, you're not crazy. This, like, I'm seeing tea floating teacups. And I guess there's a guy that lives in my backyard. He wears a bear mask, you know?
That's amazing. And I so agree. And I think that is, I mean, there's something as an adopted, so I met my birth mom when I was 18. I had my daughter when I was 20. And it was such a, there's something so remarkable about having someone that's related to you by blood with you every day. Like I'm getting emotional just explaining it. Like there's something so precious about, all parents think their kids are precious, but like, it's just like, and being able to pass this stuff on to them, like, it's beautiful. Yeah. And it's definitely part of the reason why I want to keep exploring and growing. Thank you so much. Like this was incredible. I'm so excited for this episode to drop. My hope is that it will give other people permission to explore what things, you know, what things are coming up for them that they want to explore but are afraid to explore. And there's a lot of fear and, you know, stuff. But I think that you are a beautiful example of how much goodness can come from doing that. So thank you.
I really appreciate that. It's been so fun to talk with you.
Yeah,
and you know, like if the listeners like ever want to reach out to me or tell me stories, tell you stories, I mean, I do want people to know that they're not alone and that you don't necessarily have to just abandon like the faith you grew up in, or you know, maybe it looks like you said, like finding it a little bit different of a church. I mean, I go to a Presbyterian church with a single Samoan female pastor. And, you know, I'm out and I talk about this stuff and it's still a mainline Christian church. And I let myself be loved and accepted in that community, even if I'm a little bit like the witch on the edge of the village there, you know? Like,
that's beautiful. So. I aspire to that someday. Yes. Thank you again. Oh, before we go, how can people find you online?
So I'm on Instagram at Leo Rising Tarot. My website is leorisingtarot.com. My email, leorisingtarot@gmail.com. Those are pretty much the ways. I'm like on Instagram way too much. So
it's important. I love Instagram.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Thank you so much. I'm going to.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. I so appreciate your ears. If you like what you heard, there are a couple of ways that you can support this podcast and help build momentum. First, you can share it with a friend. Second, you can leave a review on iTunes or whatever podcast app you're listening through. And third, you can support Throwing Light on Patreon and get cool shit, including a shout out on the podcast. Thank you again. I hope you have an unexpectedly amazing day.